Hello.
Yes, hello. This is Father Moritz. Father Moritz calling from the Vatican. How are you?
Yes, you have woken me from my slumber. What can I do for you?
Well, as I said, I am Father Moritz, and I hear from a very reliable source that you are able to procure specially handcrafted with magic-infused voodoo dolls. Is that correct?
Why, yes. Well, we were actually just about to go out of business with the world becoming more moral and such, so I suppose that I can still procure a voodoo doll for you. Do you know who the intended victim is?
Well, yes, we do. We have established who we would like the doll made of, but not a victim per se.
Well, we do need some things. Firstly, I need a few locks of the intended victim's hair. I also require several children to be killed in order to perform the ceremony required for the voodoo to work.
Yes, this is no problem. We have access to all of those things.
Well, can I ask, firstly, it's just, you know, out of curiosity, who is the Vatican wanting to create a voodoo doll of?
Well, I'm sure that you can understand the sensitivity of, you know, anything coming out of the Vatican. But we will be making this voodoo doll of the Pope. We intend to put the magic into a voodoo doll and make it work on the Pope. Do you understand?
Yes, I do understand my place. I will, of course, keep it concealed. I find it hard to understand that the Vatican would want to create a voodoo doll on which the Pope would be the intended victim.
Well, these are the times that we live in. Nonetheless, I will hop on a plane today and I will see you tomorrow.
Please excuse the intrusion, Holy Father, but I have for you that voodoo doll that you had asked for.
Oh yes, thank you, my child. And not a second too soon, too.
Mr. Pope, who was that?
That was nobody, little Timmy. Now here, I want you to show me on this doll exactly where the priest touched you.
Every time I got a chance, my Bible tapes on in the car.
Hello, friends. My name is Norman Lake. I'm an inspirational speaker, and my friend Duncan Trussell has given me the honor of sharing my story with you on his podcast. This episode. What a wonderful honor this is. The very fact that I am holding a microphone attests to the miraculous nature of the universe and the remarkable power of the human mind to overcome any obstacle lobbed its way by the greasy and bedraggled demons of fate that lurk in the little corners of our lives, waiting for us to stumble so that they can fall on us like rats in the slums of Calcutta upon an unfortunate house cat that has fallen into a pit of rats. It was only 4 months ago that I had a chronic addiction to Oxycontin, morphine, crystal meth, and alcohol. I was also addicted to prostitutes. It was only 4 months ago that I was spending my wife's money to fly out to Thailand, where I would arrange for rendezvous with 5 to 9 Thai prostitutes. I would have them dress me in the clothes of a Boy Scout or sometimes as a sheep herder. And I would force them to do foul things to my body. To suffocate me with their loins, to vomit into my chest and back, to wrap me in duct tape, until all that was left was my mouth, until I had to be resuscitated. And then I would have them punch me senseless until I was black and blue, covered in sores, and in such agony that the only thing that could make the pain go away was hearty injections of morphine and oxycontin. And this cycle would go on like that for months. But 4 months ago, I came to my senses. I was laying in a bed made of soiled diapers and dead rats on glue traps. Embroiled in my own perversion and sickness, when I realized that my body was composed of stardust and that all human life has been forged in the nuclear forge of alien stars. And as stardust that had woken up, I was doing a disservice to the universe by allowing myself to spend hours and hours at a time rolling underneath the thighs, breasts, mouths of prostitutes. I came to my senses, and if I came to my senses, so can you. I've nearly kicked the oxys, and I've limited the prostitutes to holidays and weekends. Go easy on yourself is what I'm trying to say. Use my story as inspiration.
Wow, thank you so much. That was Norman Lake, everybody, with an amazing sermon. And a beautiful message. What a wonderful man. What an articulate, wonderful man.
All right. Inspirational speaker, Norman Lake, serving all your inspirational needs. That was Duncan Trussell from the Duncan Trussell Family Hour. I got to figure out how he does that Sam Elliott voice effect. That's brilliant. My apologies to Duncan. I had to edit out some of the funniest lines to comply with FCC guidelines. Sorry. Before that was the gang from Imaginary Friends with the Pope's Voodoo Doll. The Duncan Trussell Family Hour and Imaginary Friends are podcasts that you can find on iTunes and other popular RSS feed lots. Well, I didn't get anything done this week. I couldn't figure out whether to burn out or fade away, so I did both. But Stacy and I are working on a series that promises to bring you buckets of embassy-burning blasphemy. And we'll be starting on that next week. So stay tuned to Pacifica Radio on the Gulf Coast, where there's so much heat, we have to keep our Fiona apples in the cooler. Oh! You're listening to the Innerside Radio Program with me, Scooter.
I'm Tony Hendro.
And I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And this is the final edition Radio Hour.
Sizzling satire with teeth.
The following is a paid political announcement.
I'm President Obama, and I killed Osama bin Laden. I killed him, and I killed him dead. He's no longer alive. And the person who killed him is me. He's no longer breathing, and his vital signs are zero. If you asked him a question, he wouldn't answer. Not because he's standoffish or because he doesn't know the answer, but because he's dead. Stone dead. Bone dead. Why is he dead? Because of me. And the reason why he's dead is myself. I personally gave the order to kill, and the fact that he was killed is because I gave the order to kill, which killed him dead. Other people pulled the trigger, but I killed him. I killed him because I killed him, and because I killed him, he's dead. When I say dead, I don't mean figuratively dead. I mean literally, actually, undeniably, and reliably dead. Dead, 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 dead. How dead? Dead, dead. Deader than a doorknob. Deader than a dead mouse. Deader than a dead death. Dead. and that's the difference in vision between me and my opponent. I pictured Osama bin Laden dead, and he didn't. And he doesn't believe folks should be able to climb the ladder. Well, Osama bin Laden can't climb a ladder. Ask Osama bin Laden if he's better off now than he was 4 years ago. You can't, because he's dead. Not just dead in the water, although he is dead in the water, the ocean in fact, but more dead than anyone who's ever been dead. He is the deadest person of all time, and I deaded him. So, to reiterate three main points, dead, I killed him, and I admit things could be better in the economy and so forth, but let's not forget, I killed somebody.
The following is paid for by the committee to re-elect the candidate who killed Osama bin Laden.
I'm Barack Obama, and I killed Osama bin Laden.
The final edition now takes you to Republican headquarters.
Okay, gentlemen, you all got the secret directive in the 1990s saying never to make a sincere, unqualified apology, no matter how obvious or egregious the offense. But the RNC thinks everyone needs a refresher. So let's review the basics first of all. All right, let's say you're caught on tape saying half the country is lazy and useless. What's your excuse?
I expressed myself inelegantly.
Nice. Now, suppose your tax cuts and deregulation led to economic collapse. What do you do?
Blame it on the next president.
Obviously, but what else?
Claim we can only fix it with more deregulations and tax cuts?
Stupid, but correct. Now, we're going to do a little role play. Who wants to pretend to be Vice President Dick Cheney?
Me.
Oh, I do. I do.
All right, Glenn, you'll do the honors.
I was born for this part.
And I need one of you to be Harry Whittington, the guy Cheney shot in the face in a hunting accident.
I'm to do that.
Mark, you're Harry.
Awesome.
All right, Glenn, take this toy gun, point it at Mark, pull the trigger like you're accidentally shooting him.
Got it. Oh my God, that was a real gun. Mark is dead.
Okay, part two of the role play.
But he's really dead. Oh my God, the blood.
I know, focus, part two. I have Mark's family right outside. Now Glenn, it's your job to convince them that this is their fault.
Their fault? It's your fault.
How's it my fault? I was standing way over here.
But the gun. Gonna be sick.
Calm down and think. If this isn't your fault, and it certainly isn't mine, then it's because his lazy, welfare queen family expects the government to take care of them.
They do?
Well, they do now. Mark can't support them.
Oh my God.
Okay, I'm letting them in. Don't blow this. Mrs. Amberson, kids, you want to come in for a second? I'm afraid there's a problem.
Mark? Mark! No! What happened in here?
Daddy!
Glenn, you want to explain this to Mark's widow and orphans?
Laura, we were, it wasn't supposed to, you know...
Come on, Glenn, get some talking points.
Look, Laura, the people in this room are job creators.
That's right.
When I look at you, I see yet another single mother claiming she's a victim.
We are victims. My husband was just shot to death.
And he's been dead for almost a minute. And you've done nothing about it. You haven't even called the police.
I'm calling them now.
Not we took your phone fault. Away.
Haven't Not even called the police.
Fault. Not our fault. Not our
you've
fault.
You've been the head of your Not household for 45 Not seconds. And he's still
Not
dead. Where's the leadership?
Not
it's almost like you
fault.
Wanted him to die. Not
Why did you kill him, fault. Laura? Why Not did you do it?
You'll fry for Not this.
But Glenn is the one Not holding the gun.
When are you Not going to stop blaming fault. The guy who actually Not shot him? When are you going Not to accept personal fault. Responsibility Not for what you've fault. Done?
I Not can't! Fault. I'm Republican!
Not our fault!
Damn it.
We're all Republicans. This can't be anyone's fault.
Then it's just something that couldn't be stopped.
No one could have predicted this kind of attack.
And we're the only ones qualified to protect the world from it.
That's right, Laura. Democrats would be soft on this kind of thing.
We're all heroes. We've got to cut up the body. Liberty,
together we will be. In order to improve his dismal polling numbers among Hispanic voters, the Romney campaign has undergone a complete makeover, positioning Romney as the Mexican candidate for President of the United States. Here is a clip of a recent campaign speech by Governor Romney.
I want to thank you all for having me. And I just want to say to all of you, hola, mi llamo Mitt Romney. I come here not as a presidential candidate, but as an amigo. As you may know, my father, Jorge Romney, was born in Mexico. Mi padre really instilled a love of Mexican culture in me from a young age, like tacos, con queso, and Speedy Gonzalez. Which is why I'm here today, to let you know that I support 100% of America, including you, mi compadres and vatos. I am on your side. And to suggest otherwise would just be muy estúpido. My opponents want to paint me as some sort of out-of-touch elitist, to which I would say, who you trying to get crazy with, S.A.? I mean, they are the ones who are loco. They say that I am anti-immigration, that I support policies of self-deportation. That's not true. I mean, that's as likely as getting Menudo back together. El Presidente Obama has done nothing to fix our broken immigration system. That's not very Rico Suave, if you ask me. El Presidente has also done nothing to fix our broken economy. And quite frankly, Americans are screaming, ay, Dios mío. With his economic plan, El Presidente Obama wants to create trillion-dollar deficits and take away the Coronas and Chipotles and the George Lopez's of hardworking hombres like ustedes. And it's time the gringos of this country stood up and said, no way, Jose. I want to put the good muchachos and mama kittis of America back to work. I want us as a nation to be able to stand up and say, Dale, a tu cuerpo, alegría Macarena, que tu cuerpo es pa darle alegría y cosa buena. Dale, a tu cuerpo, alegría Macarena, hey, Macarena. Adios, muchas gracias, and buenos noches.
Congressman and Republican vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan continues to pick holes in what he considers the outdated, costly, and inefficient safety net which keeps the nation's 47% fat and happy. The final edition's Strong Powers and Pepper Lewis were the first to break the news that he intends to replace Medicare with a faith-based system of miraculous cures called Mediprayer. Last week, they visited the congressman's pilot daycare project, the Ayn Rand Detention Center in downtown Milwaukee, which he'll launch nationwide when the Republican ticket wins in November and Mitt Romney dies at Thanksgiving of a mysterious brain ailment. This week, the congressman discusses his revolutionary approach to education K through 12. Over to Strong and Pepper, who are lunching with Ryan in the nation's capital.
Congressman, is there a common theme to the new Republican safety net?
I'd compare it to basketball. First developed for poor city kids as a low-cost alternative to sports like baseball and football, which require costly equipment and valuable real estate. We want to do that basketball thing for the poor.
You don't mean the Republican safety net will look like a basketball net, do you?
No, Pepper, I don't. What I mean is that in the 21st century, George W. Bush's wonderful phrase must be amended to low-cost, compassionate conservatism.
How do we get low-cost compassion into education?
Simple. We radically reduce the number of scholars. Ergo, more dollars per scholar.
Doesn't every American child have the right to an education?
When I last looked, the Bill of Rights doesn't include education. Education is a privilege of those who can be educated.
And how do you decide who can be educated?
My administration, our administration, would implement a sweeping new education policy called the Slow Child Left Behind Act. That way, they don't deprive faster kids of scarce education funds.
You define that as compassionate?
Absolutely. They don't feel bad about themselves for being a drag on their faster classmates. Do you honestly think that slow kids, or their slow parents, are interested in a complex matter like education policy? Slow kids avoid wasted years in futile pursuit of literacy and numeracy. We rotate them out of the system as early as possible into special apprenticeships. Catering, building maintenance, garment manufacture, simple, viable skills. The work of human hands that made America great.
How do you pay for this slow track if all of the education dollars are going to the fast kids?
Here's the beauty part, guys. The Slow Child Left Behind program will be part of the military budget,
which is scheduled to grow substantially under a Republican administration. That is brilliant.
Far from being left behind, these kids will get a jump start on exciting military careers in the catering corps, the maintenance corps, tailoring corps,
the latrine corps.
Pepper. Those who serve in the latrine corps are defending our freedom no less than Navy SEALs. Our fighting men and women need clean, well-lit toilets when their patriotic work is done.
So, in effect, you'll be drafting kids into the military in kindergarten and grade school?
No. We'll be setting them on track to a brighter future. You can become a 5-star general in the latrine corps. And Pepper, it's not a draft. Slow kids will be free to drop out anytime and begin exciting careers, mooching off the 53% for the rest of their lives.
That is a disgusting slur on disadvantaged kids.
Whoa, Pepper. That's out of line, babe.
Not to worry, Strong. As a bona fide intellectual, I see everything in the cold light of pure reason. But let me assure you, Pepper, in the Ryan, that is Romney administration, you'll eat those words with hot sauce.
Thanks, Paul. And well said. Pepper, honey, you gotta cool it with this incredibly biased questioning.
Don't honey me, you quizzling.
Quizzling? What's a quizzling?
This episode of the Final Edition Radio Hour was performed by Darby Worley, Kevin Janis, Barry Lank, John Marshall, and Tony Hendra. It was written by Barry Lank, John Marshall, Lou Grossberger, Fisher King, Roy Koshy, Jeff Chrysler, and Tony Hendra. Be sure to visit thefinaledition.com several times an hour for more sizzling satire with teeth. The Final Edition Radio Hour was edited and engineered by Greg Russ.
Hey guys, Will Durst here to say I'm worried about Mitt Romney. Seriously, the guy may just be running the worst campaign ever. And yes, that includes the McDLT, print ads for organic hemp underwear, and France in 39. Not to mention McCain-Palin in 08, which currently holds the gold standard for lousy campaigns. Willard has taken bad to a whole new level. Bad like a dumpster behind a fish market during a sanitation strike bad. Bad like a $3 Dark Knight Rises DVD bought off a Times Square cardboard table with Albanian subtitles bad. Bad like Todd Akin at a NARAL benefit bad. And every time the former governor of Massachusetts opens his mouth, it gets worse. He's tone-deaf, tongue-tied, logically impaired, and as approachable as a nearsighted porcupine in heat. The anti-Ray Romano. Nobody loves Mitt. So uncomfortable around real people, you could practically hear him whisper icky, icky, icky under his breath while shaking hands at rallies. You know there's an aide with a bottle of Purell hand sanitizer waiting for him on the bus. Maybe even a 55-gallon drum connected to a shower head. Romney got caught on a secret video saying he wasn't going to concern himself with 47% of America because they were moochers and malingerers, which has depressed his base because, hell, 47%, that's more than half. One major problem with insulting 47% of the public is that at least 58% of us worry we're part of that 47%, and you know 105% of America believes that. They do. Bet you $10,000. Now he's trying to reset his campaign. The Etch-A-Sketch has been turned upside down and prepare to be shaken. Problem is, you keep rebooting something as stiff as Mitt and it starts short-circuiting all over the place. Romney 8.0, better than Romney 7.0, now with desperation. Maybe it's the extra-large silver spoon in his mouth that keeps him from seeing the view from the middle class. Can't understand why they don't pull themselves up by the bootstraps like he did when his daddy loaned him his first million. Now, with the debate still to come, there's plenty of time to turn this race around, but this far in, it's like turning the Titanic after hitting the iceberg, and the helm is underwater. Face it, if Bain Capital were running Mitt's campaign right now, they'd close it down, fire him, and hire some Chinese guy to do it better and cheaper. For the CCCP, I'm Will Durst.
Barack!
Yes, Michelle?
Are you busy?
Just a little debate prep, Michelle.
Oh.
What's up?
It's time to pick the next 100 lucky people who have won a dinner with the president.
All right, Michelle. Let me give the raffle drum a couple of turns.
You are always so fair.
Yeah, and honest, Michelle.
Fair and honest.
And here are the lucky winners.
Wow, you can grab 100 raffle tickets with one hand.
It takes practice, but I'm pretty good at it now.
And the voters sure love those presidential dinners.
Yeah. I better get back to debate prep, Michelle.
Oh, but before you do, Barack, you could pick the 100 winners of Shoot a Foul Shot with the President.
Oh, okay. Better spin the raffle drum again.
This is democracy in action, mixed with a little socialism.
I believe in the redistribution of lottery tickets. And here are the lucky Shoot a Foul Shot contest winners.
Oh, they will be so happy, Barack.
Yeah.
And shooting foul shots does so much to combat childhood obesity.
I'm glad to help.
And I know you want to get back to debate prep, Barack.
It's important that I prepare.
That's why you will want to spin the raffle drum once more to pick the 100 winners of the Stop Bothering the President and Let Him Get Some Work Done contest.
I don't have to spin the raffle drum for that one, Michelle. Anyone who bought a ticket to Stop Bothering the President is an automatic winner.
I love a contest where everybody wins.
Some democracy in action for you from David Dozer and Janet Coleman. Before that was the great Will Durst. Those were from the CCCP Monthly Laughing Nightmare, which airs on sister station WBAI. Before that, we heard from the Final Edition Radio Hour, and you've been listening to the Inner Side Radio Program. This and all previous Inner Side Radio programs are archived in air quality MP3 on the interwebs. Use your Google virus and search The Inner Side. You can also fiend me on Facebook from that website. And if this program is not profane and blasphemous enough for you, you might want to check out our Skeptics podcast, Skeptiles, S-K-E-P-T-I-L-E-S. Our website is skeptiles.com, and you can find the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and all that newfangled pod stuff. The Skeptiles are Joe Dixon, famous YouTube guy and stand-up comic from New York City, Sean Ewald, mad scientist also from New York City, and myself, Scooter. That's me, and I'll see y'all next week.
Down with disease, 3 weeks in my bed, trying to stop these demons that keep dancing in my head.